hurt. You're just worn down.
With ecstasy, it was like one day I was healthy and had an immune system, and the next day I didn't.
I would wake up sometimes, like, shaking.
It's physically painful. Once I hit my absolute bottom emotionally and mentally, I just wanted to die.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free New York and America.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. Time is just about 6 o'clock time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Really.
Thank you.
I'm going to ruin it by speaking over the last minute of our 8-minute theme. But yeah, we have to get going because the listeners demand it. This is another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel here, Kyle over there.
Yes, I'm here. Hi. I'm waving too.
He's waving. Those of you who subscribe to the video feed.
It's not like one of those British waves, like a royalty thing. No, it's like a just normal. Hey, how you doing?
American style.
Yeah, the way we do.
We saw the wedding.
We did.
That was a nice wedding. I mean, okay, I'm sorry. I probably made a lot of enemies by saying that, because you're not supposed to embrace the monarchy. But you know what? I thought it was kind of cool. I'm sorry. I just thought it was kind of cool to see all that. I didn't know about Windsor Castle. All right? I didn't know. I thought everything happened in London. I thought Buckingham Palace was enough for these people. But no, they got Windsor Castle, too.
It's counterintuitive, because in London, it's the city of Windsor, right?
No.
Or Windsor...
It's the city of... Oh. I know this. Oh, thank you, theme, for stuttering at the end. It's not finished yet. There's 2.49 seconds left, according to the CD player. No, it's not city. It's every street sign in London says... And you know what? I'm not going to check Wikipedia. I'm not going to check Google. I'm going to check my brain. And by the end of the show, I will have remembered what London says on the street signs.
Yeah, it's like the city of, or the The, like,
Whimsy, that's it. Whimsy. No, that's not it.
No.
City of... It's something. I don't understand it
like
either.
Like, the town council is, it's similar. It's, you know what it's I like do? Windsor, but...
When I can't remember something, I go through the alphabet. So I go, city of, beginning with A, city of, beginning with B, and I'm going to do that in my head. And most times that works. It doesn't always work. But sometimes I'll get to a letter and... That'll, you know, something will click in my brain saying, yeah, proceed, and I'll go, okay, L-A, L-B, well, obviously that's not going anywhere, until I figure it out. Sometimes that works.
But this confusion is not uncommon.
No.
In fact, a lot of people did associate the wedding taking place in Windsor with London, but it is, in fact, a city in and of itself miles away from London proper, and... Well, we all learned about it in this interesting town. They got all the homeless people and carted them out so it didn't look nasty. And
I don't know how many homeless people are in Windsor Castle.
What? People were just listening to Amy Goodman. They were talking about that.
At Windsor Castle, there are homeless
people? Yeah, they had to clean all the homeless people off the street so they could have a wedding.
Well, in the city, I'm sure, the city of Windsor, but the castle proper, that long walk, it's actually called the Long Walk. I want to do that. Apparently you can. You can go there and take that long walk that they, rode a carriage down.
There are incredible views. And in that long walk, I'm reminded of one of the vantage points looking through the gates of the castle down the entirety of that walk. And it's just incredible the vantage that building has. Just with the placement, the mere placement and the way it is kept and so on and so forth. Really, it's remarkable. We don't have a lot of stuff like that as far as really, really old places and the sort of pomp and circumstance that is around it. One of my favorite features of this, I'll just say right away, was seeing all the vehicles. How many families do you know that have like 6 generations of Rolls Royce?
And Jaguars.
And Jaguar.
Yeah. When they drove off later, after the wedding ceremony, they have these long roads that go to the castle. There was a road that went in a different direction. It's kind of like all roads lead to Windsor. They took off in a different direction, and you can see the license plate on the car.
That's right.
And I thought it'd be clever and look it up and see, hey, I got the prince's, not prince, I guess he is a prince, yeah, the prince's license plate. It turns out they made it especially for that day. It had the date of the royal wedding
kind of
on
like,
the license plate.
It's your day.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. So yeah. That was what they did.
We noticed so many peculiarities, and it was interesting. I think the world took note as well. We were the only ones, but indeed we were up and watching it live, even though it was repeated and
over and over and over
it
again.
It was ad nauseum all weekend, as though nothing else had occurred, which is not the case, but. It was a good diversion, I think. A lot of people appreciated
Westminster,
that.
That's it. That's
right. Okay.
The
Windsor
thing is, I got stuck in my head because my head said W, And I'm like, no, Head, you're wrong, because Windsor is W. That's what you're trying to think of. My head overruled me and said, no, it's another W. Westminster, City of Westminster. That's what the London sign said.
I did that
all by myself. I did not look at any. I was tempted, but I didn't.
No, that's incredible. That illustrates the point I was trying to make, is that there's
what were we talking about?
Believe it or not, probably a Windsor, Westminster Abbey.
Westminster Abbey.
Much in the way there's a Windsor Castle
Wait, what's Westminster Abbey? Is that Parliament? I'm sorry, I don't live there.
Exactly. So this is the kinds of things that confuses people. They don't know these people, these places and buildings and churches and castles. We don't have castles to go throwing around names.
This is why I like it. I love the intrigue and the mystery and the history. The mystery and the history. That's a good name for a show, somebody who hasn't done a show yet. But you know, all this typically British stuff that goes on for centuries, yeah, it's corrupt, it's unfair, you didn't vote for it, I know. But it's something that's kind of like a fairy tale that's surrounding you. And if it gives you any comfort to embrace that and just kind of follow it, it's no worse than Hollywood, I guess. And if you don't want it, get rid of it. But, you know, I'm not gonna say from here, from America, that this is bad, it should be abolished. It's, you know, watching the ceremony was the coolest thing in the world, because you saw how that got kind of turned on its head by America. You know, the bride is American, mixed race. The preacher came in, and boy, what a sermon that guy gave, preaching Martin Luther King and all kinds of talk about fire and love and just going on for much longer than he should have, and being very animate in front of the royal family, probably the stodgiest family on earth. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought that was a great meeting of cultures.
Speaking of fire, the whole time he was speaking, I was worried about the candles falling over and causing some sort of catastrophic incident that forces the wedding to be postponed or something. But it was just this interesting discomfort that America brought to the table. But one thing, just to add, the history, the rich history, they have so much to draw upon, I think, that setting and the choices that were made for this, I think, can communicate a real incredible amount, a great deal of information, the choices that are made and the sort of backdrop, and on, which all, you know, kind of characterized it and gave... And gives us a little bit of insight into the direction, into the mood, and it's interesting to hear that kind of analysis from Anglophiles and people who understand, I guess, the monarchy and the rich history. It's nice to delve into that a little bit, since our history is really much shorter by comparison. So I really enjoyed those moments, just kind of learning a little bit and as I said, enjoying the diversion.
Yeah, that's what it basically is. It's a big diversion. And, you know, it's kind of cool to be a part of that, to just kind of hear and see something that's completely alien to us. And it's, you know, it's probably a whole lot better than what we're going through right now over here anyway. So it's just... It's neat to see people coming together, even if it's something that is way outdated and crazy.
Yeah, and for those who maybe be disheartened or you know, in this moment feel there isn't leadership, this is a form of leadership, perhaps something we don't subscribe to as much, given our autonomy and history with the Commonwealth. But it really has filled a space, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
In the overall attitude and sort of long-term direction, it's incredibly symbolic. This couple themselves are not necessarily very meaningful in the hierarchy of that institution, but it is symbolic, and I think that in and of itself carries tremendous weight, and a lot of people took note. And that combined with... the performers, the beautiful singing, and as you noted, mm-hmm. the preacher
can be sacrificial.
There he is. I don't know what that noise is. That's what happens when you
I think
when you try to play a video on our system here.
Wow.
That was terrible.
That might have been God.
Might have been. Might have been.
Or you were running some kind of loop. This
world. Well, anyway, he sounded a lot better in person.
Oh, it was stirring. It was really dynamic. I mean, the kind of tone, the kind of speech you hear perhaps in a like a Baptist church or an American place of worship, but in this setting really was a contrast. As I said, the singing as well, but that was very, I think, pointed. It was a change, something, you know, instead of tradition being used as something to instill ways of being that have gone before. This is sort of using the tradition as a vehicle to indicate a direction in the future, or at least a more open monarchy, and in terms of embracing culture and family, even discomfort. You see, you know, the queen adjusting herself and mention of slaves, and a lot of people have been commenting on those reactions from Camilla and all on and on. But the reality is, those folks aren't going to be at the top of this family forever. So that sort of handing of power and some approval. I guess we would say mostly approval, as discomfort and or uncomfortable as it may be for some of the older generations of the queen herself. I think there's embrace. You know, there is a welcome for that discomfort. Otherwise, I mean, we wouldn't have had this moment. You know, every bit of this was planned. So
right, and I think I kind of like the discomfort factor.
Yeah,
maybe that's why I enjoyed it so much, because you're seeing the royal family turned on its head by change, and that's cool to see differences. And I think, you know, in the younger generation, not the really young generation, but, you know, William and Harry. I see something a little bit different in them than in their predecessors. They seem a little less stodgy, a little more with it. And I'm hoping that kind of, translates into something that's more connected with the people.
Yeah, like self-effacing, kind of like this ability to see humor or folly in your own identity.
Yeah.
Whether it be wrapped up in the trappings of monarchy or just as an individual. Yeah, and I think that comfort with that messiness is emblematic of our times. You know, that things are uncertain or you know, wildly different than they were in the 50s or than when they were in even the 80s and 90s. So,
and you know, someone posted a picture of Prince William and Prince Harry standing next to a picture of Donald Jr. and Eric Trump.
Oh gosh.
You know, one pair gave to their country because they served in the military and they've donated all kinds of things, and the other pair just took for themselves.
Total goobers.
You could not get a more stark contrast. And if only we had people of that caliber in our government here, I think we'd be in much better shape. Regardless of what you may think of the royal family now, I think we would be in better shape with them in charge over here. Not as the royal family, but as people that actually had common sense.
Like a guest appearance or something?
But it's, you know, it's weird to see the reaction of many people that feel, you know, the good old days are gone. Mm. That everything is ruined now because we have diversity. And you see that everywhere. You see that in the royal wedding. You see people bemoaning, oh, my God, why did they let that black guy on stage so long? You know, all these people singing soul music and gospel and things like that. It's not what the royal family is all about. Well, you know what? Now it is. The world is changing. Everything is changing. We've been watching a TV show that we kind of got to like a lot, and I didn't expect to at all, the remake of Lost in Space. You know?
Yep.
And I was very happy the other day when I found out it was renewed for a second season. I remember seeing the first series a little bit when I was a kid, and even then it seemed really cheesy. And this show, admittedly, is cheesy as well. There's a lot of miraculous rescues and things like that. But I like it a lot because, well, first of all, the science is pretty sound for the most part. There are some exceptions, but it's really cool to see rockets being launched and talk with space travel and also just the portrayal of alien worlds in a fairly imaginative way that maybe you haven't thought of. But when I went to read reviews of the show on IMDb and other places, I found there was all this anger and outrage. I couldn't believe it. The reason people are upset is because there are strong female characters. Everyone is calling it, and by everyone I mean like 80% of the reviews, calling it PC. You know, a very politically correct show now, where the gender roles have been flipped, and the women are the intelligent ones calling the shots, and the men are stupid, which is not the case, but apparently having a strong female lead in the show, there are a couple actually, is a threat. And having somebody who's mixed race, as one of the children is also a threat. People are really upset by this. And I guess maybe what it is, they're taking something from their childhood, something from the past that was pure, lost in space. How much more pure can you get? and changing the rules and making it so that the guy doesn't always save the day. The woman saves the day most of the time because she's the rocket scientist this time. Well, guess what? That's reality. Reality is diversity. And a lot of people can't take it. I was kind of surprised that so many people were condemning this program for those reasons. Not because of science, not because of script writing, but because of the fact that certain people were more intelligent than other people, and they thought it should maintain the traditional role where the male called the shots and there was no racial diversity. You find it in the weirdest places. You find these angry people everywhere. And I think, you know, with the coming of Trump, their outlets have increased dramatically. So you see them everywhere, not being ashamed to say the things that maybe they would have kept quiet before. So we have some challenges ahead of us because we're going to be coming up against this.
We felt the same way, I think, about Star Trek. We said the same thing. But again, we kind of appreciated that there were strong female leads. There was a diversity in the cast and interesting plot and other elements that, you know, were different and distinct from previous times. Even though Star Trek admittedly is an incredibly diverse and interesting show in its own right as far as portraying that stuff. So, but this show, same thing, doing more with developing the characters as individuals, the identities, skills, having, the young male character have self-doubt, that kind of thing. Or as you said, the brawny male leads are co-stars as really incidental and just generally muscle in most cases.
But they're good characters, though. I mean, you know, the males are noble characters. They, in many instances, they'll sacrifice themselves for somebody else. There's nothing inherently bad or weak about them. It's just people are upset that they're not the leading role as they've always been. And enough already. You know, give someone else a chance. It reflects reality. It's not like this is something that is, you know, it never happens.
Yeah.
Look around you. Look at the strong females around you. Look at mixed race people around you. This is our reality today, and we are better for it. And if you can't accept that, you're having trouble with reality, and that's something you should explore.
The funny thing is the weakness of those brawny male leads, I think, is also in and of itself like cliched, because their sacrifice and all of that is about being the protector and, you know, putting their lives on the line and, you know, using brute strength or might in various situations that maybe the scientists or the more cerebral of the crew would take on in a different sense. So
right,
their
right.
virtues, they have something to bring to the table, but in many cases it is this sort of cliched protector role. But the critique is that the threat to people critiquing it is that they're also being diminished by strong female leads, which is just silly because it's about having a panoply of skills brought to the spaceship out in space that needs everything, all hands on deck. So
that's right. They are in space after all, and on a different planet, I do recommend it. It's if you like science fiction, this is something that I think you'll get a kick out of. It's creative. You will get a little annoyed at the main characters constantly being saved miraculously. If you can get past that, you'll find some decent science. You'll find some real looking to the sky for adventure type of science fiction, which I don't think we have enough of. And you won't be able to predict where the plot's going to go. You'll think something's going to happen one way, and it'll go a different way. It's worth it. It's on Netflix, and hopefully the haters lessen in number, and people who support this kind of thing step forward, because I think it's sending good messages.
Yeah. I mean, and I think a similar critique to the exploration, I mean, that science fiction in general has a really long history in writing and TV and stuff, but I think that with the, like, emphasis on space now, we need more cultural artifacts. We need more media about this stuff and what we'll be facing, because, I mean, ethically and you know, other social attributes, or we're just now, I mean, what are we, 3 seasons into Black Mirror, and we're just now seeing Google maybe... being put to task over whether they're evil or not, or Facebook in the same right. It took many different types of shows and many different types of conversations and teaching and that kind of thing to get people to understand that maybe just because you can't see it in a technology company doesn't mean that it isn't, you know, eating your brains or whatever.
That's right. We were predicting this Black Mirror stuff for decades before it even came along.
Anybody familiar with the magazine? Yeah,
absolutely. It's great to see it actually being portrayed. It's not so great to see it coming true in real life, but it's inevitable.
And writing about tech or filming video, that kind of stuff with tech is very difficult to depict. It's been a topic of discussion and showing ever since, you know, The Matrix and some of the early computer films, hacking films, you know, many of the visualizations and stuff like that gets sort of derided. But as that's gotten better, we can, you know, with shows like Black Mirror, see depictions of this stuff and how it can kind of creep and be used and pose a threat in very real ways. And that is manifest itself in the discussion of actual, you know, misuse of technology now in the present moment. So I think space is going to need equal critiques, because if, you know, we put all this emphasis in defense and getting, you know, rich people off the planet so that they can go on and live.
Oh, I'm in favor of getting rich people off the planet. Let's get them off right now, in fact.
Right.
Go for it.
And we'll all, like,
to the moon.
Then we get to, like, die in squalor, or at least party, you know, without them. You know, we need to have, like, real conscious discussion about that and not leave it up to, I think, you know, state entities or private business.
I'm for compromise. That's party and squalor. I'm good with that. But, you know, one thing I really do have an issue with are people that criticize anyone wanting to go to space, wanting to explore. I don't care if you're a conservative. I don't care if you're liberal. But if you say something like, you know, this money could be better spent on our, you know, poor people. And while I agree, every bit of money can be better spent on poor people, why do you always target the space program? Why do you always target exploration? Target the military. Target all the waste in corporate America. Do that first. Don't make the exploration of other worlds the first target, because it's such an easy target. It's something that always gets cut. It's something that does amazing things for a fraction of what is spent on other things. They're sending telescopes into space that will see, you know, trillions of stars and be able to detect other planets and see if there's, you know, possible life on those other planets. These are things I want to know. I want to be able to send probes to other places. This is what we're here for, to explore, to see what's around us. And if you start saying, yeah, we can't do that now because we have other things to deal with, you're never going to do it. Whereas there's plenty of money to solve all the world's problems if you simply start looking at where the actual waste is. For instance, you know, the military asked for a certain amount from Congress, an incredible, bloated, insane, obscenely crazy amount. And what does Congress do? They say, yeah, you know what? We're going to give you more than what you asked for. That's what they do. Turn your attention to that first, please.
The other thing is, if you consider, like, the emphasis on like what the military is fighting over, it's generally scarcity down here on Earth. So we're continuing to grow and consume more, and it's about habitat loss and the scarcity of water and other things down here. But when you realize and accept the enormity of the universe, you can kind of change that attitude, especially given, you know, the ability to move and transport yourself and actually understand the universe. You can really consider the abject abundance of the universe. There's lots of stuff out there. So here we are, like, fighting over, you know, the last bit of the only things here. How many billions and billions of dollars are we going to dump into this perception of scarcity when we're actually floating around enormous amounts of dust and minerals and resources everywhere? You know, it could be a fraction of an investment compared to war over scarce resources to actually get places where you can physically access abundance. And that's where you get these, like, wild space ideas, like, for mining things. And I guess the Chinese, they're going to the dark side of the moon.
Dark side of the moon.
Is this the helium mining? They want to get helium or something for further space?
But there is no dark side of the moon, actually. In fact, it's all dark. No, actually, that's not true.
I thought it was cheese.
Well, okay, no, it's true. There is no dark side of the moon because the moon spins. It's just the same side is always facing us.
Every time it hits us, we're seeing the same side.
So you see a full moon, and the side that is facing us has the sun shining on it. When you don't see the moon, when the moon is gone and people start panicking, that's when the other side is lit. And we're not on the other side, so we don't get to see it. Now, what's true is there was a whole side of the moon that we had never seen before until we went up in space and took a look, and that's when we found all those, like, you know, weird colonies and stuff that we don't talk about.
Well, that's where the factory is.
That's where the factory is.
Speaking of colony.
Colony is another good show. We not as diverse, so if diversity scares you and you want to see a lot of white people in science fiction, then okay, Colony.
Yeah.
But there are some minorities in there, so be careful.
Yeah.
You know, you might be a little shocked.
No,
and, of course, there's aliens, so that's going to be traumatizing.
No, Colony is a honky safe space.
It's got Sawyer from Lost.
Yeah.
You can't get any more white than that.
Yeah. No, you should be good. Just get yourself some Wonder Bread in case there's an emergency and some mayo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ew. You know, we're gonna see a good science fiction film tonight. You know what it is, right?
Oh, no. I know what you're talking about. I have no idea what's next.
A Trip to the Moon.
Oh, this is George Millet. This is
famous.
That's
right. That's very famous. What we've been doing over the last... we mentioned this a few weeks ago that we started watching Academy Award-winning films, which I thought was really kind of cool. But we started with 1929. But then I realized, you know what? There are films that started way before then, and I was able to trace it all the way back to 1888, when there was the first film ever actually recorded. Is only about 3 or 4 seconds long. It's people basically dancing around in a circle. It's so weird and alien-ish to just look at this and see people for the first time being captured like that, the awkwardness, kind of like, you know, any YouTube video. And then from there, we've been advancing year by year, 1888, 1889, and the films are very short, you know, 20 seconds long. We saw something last night from 1901 that was about 10 minutes long, and that was the longest yet. But yeah, 1902 is the classic film, A Trip to the Moon, where I'm not going to ruin it, but basically they take a trip to the moon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's an iconic thing. There's a famous photo from one of the frames where basically you have the man in the moon, or the personification of the moon, with a rocket in its eye.
Okay, so you know about that. All right,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
That's the thing that comes to mind first when people think of when they're reminded of this film.
Not the first film that shows the moon.
No.
We've seen films before that. There's a lot of fascination with telescopes and astronomers. And just basically playing around with different kinds of shots. You see, like, you know, close-up shots and far-away shots, and you realize that's the first time that was ever done, dissolves, two things at the same time, films within films. But, yeah, astronomy, seeing things on the moon, seeing creatures from other places showing up, That was something people always seem to be fascinated with, and it just gets better and better as we go along. So we're basically advancing. We're going to catch up to 1929 at some point.
Where the Oscars are for us.
Where the Oscars started. We've been continuing with that, too. We saw
Cimarron.
Cimarron was the most recent one, but we saw Wings, 1929. The silent epic, the only silent film that won Best Film for Academy Award. And then after that was, it was a terrible film, the Song of Hollywood or something, or the Song of Broadway or something. It was really terrible, and I think the worst film ever to win an Academy Award.
The first one with a depiction of people being drunk.
Okay, yeah.
Or no, wait, was that All Quiet on the Western Front?
Well, All Quiet on the Western Front followed that, and that was really good. That was, you know, that was the film to basically convince people that war is a horrible thing. And when you consider it, that was, 1930, 1931, that era, and it was about World War
I. Yeah.
Well, it didn't work, obviously, because we had World War II shortly after that. But a masterpiece, a real masterpiece. And then the one, yeah, you just mentioned, which actually was billed as a Western, but it was more of an epic because it covered, I think, about 40 years in people's history. They went out to Oklahoma. There was this land grab where basically people ran out and literally stuck things in the ground to stake their claims.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. What was interesting about that film was that the plight of the Native Americans was illustrated. And the main character was very sympathetic to them, realizing that they were being ripped off and cheated at every turn. Unfortunately, the film is condemned by many as being racist and filled with all kinds of stereotypes, and that's certainly true, but you know what? That's how things were then. And the things that film did say at the time were really, really progressive for that period. You can't judge another period in history by the standards of today. You can simply look at the people and ask, did they do as much as they could have done with their limitations? And I think in this particular case, they took some real chances.
Yeah, the father figure in the settling family there took basically a lead role in defending and was sort of the Atticus Finch of this story several times during the film or over the course of the generations depicted, describes, you know, land grabs and the Native Americans as, and even, you know, defends abuse or you know, gunslingers, you know, messing with people, roughing people up and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It does have depictions of like a mammy figure and having like slaves work in the house. Even Native American love interest of Cimarron is a childhood friend and then ends up being like a domestic worker for them.
Yeah, the son of the main character winds up getting married to a Native American. They don't call them Native American, they call them Indians.
Indian,
obviously.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't condemn them for that because that was what was going on at the time, and what they did do was make that person as equal as they possibly could and bring her into the family. And that was unheard of at the time. So I think that was something that deserves some acknowledgement. Yeah, it's not, you know, it would not fly today.
No.
There are things that, you know, are portrayed 20 years ago that wouldn't fly today.
Yep.
We're constantly changing and evolving, and we have to learn from the past and realize that even now we are not perfect. In 20 years, 40 years, we're going to look back at some of the things we were doing now and say, how could people have done that? It doesn't mean we're bad people. It means that we have not advanced to that stage yet where we see the errors of our ways and how we can do things in a more fair and balanced way.
Wow, I think you just brought this back to the royal family.
Meant to do that, yes.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I mean, likening the royal wedding to Lost in Space, that was a feat in and of itself.
No, that's not so hard to do.
Wow. This is enlightening. I'm learning. I'm learning a lot here.
All right.
So what else is going on?
Everybody sit back and learn, because we're just going to keep rambling until somebody learns something.
Tell me something crazy happened on Long Island.
Well, something crazy is going to happen on Long Island. Trump's visiting. Trump is...
Again?
Yeah, I can't seem to stay away from the place.
Why?
I don't know. Long Island immigrant advocates rallied a day ahead of President Donald Trump's planned visit to Bethpage, to say they do not welcome him and that local officials should reject his rhetoric. About 25 representatives of groups working for immigrant and civil rights, representing communities from Salvadorans and Haitians to Jews and Pakistanis, joined today outside the Nassau County Executive Building in Mineola to denounce Trump before his appearance tomorrow afternoon at the Morrily Homeland Security Center. That's spelled M-O-R-R-E-L-L-Y, Homeland Security Center. Never heard of it before, but that's where to go if you want to protest Trump tomorrow. They chanted, no more hate and no Trump, no. You know, I could have come up with better chance than that, really. You know, they would have been edgy. They would have been edgy. They would have rhymed. They would have had some passion behind them.
They need some ghostwriting.
Yeah, we're there to help. They held signs, some of which were critical of the president. Others called for support for young people. Okay, you know, that's good, and I hope a lot of people show up. Unfortunately, you know, there are so many supporters, and it really scares me sometimes because you listen to these people talk, and you realize they're just latching on to the rhetoric that he's putting forth that's not based in any reality. You know, basically identifying a threat that has not proven itself to be there, demonizing people, making them subhuman even, and just spreading a lot of hatred and fear. It's easy to do that. That's been done throughout history. But it's weird to see it being done in your neighborhood with people you know that should know better. And, you know, if you feel we're talking down, that's not the intention. Because I know a lot of, you know, we were traveling around the country a couple of times over the past year, and, you know, people in these other regions are great, wonderful people. You know, we trust them and respect them, look up to them. And we are not immune from this either. We can certainly buy into propaganda and buy into something that seems to make sense, but when you do the research, doesn't add up. We can all be pushed into something through emotion and through trying to win an argument. But I think in times like this, we really need to take a good look at what it is we're actually being told and what is believable and what is not. I think we've never been at a state like this where we're being pushed into something that really is kind of dangerous, specifically when Trump is casting aspersions on entire intelligence communities and entire political parties and entire nationalities and entire religious groups and
vocations,
everything you can imagine. It's really, you know, there's all kinds of bad things that can happen. There's also good things that can happen because we can realize how strong we are in the wake of that. And if we triumph in the end and limit what the damage is he can do, okay, great on us. You know, we're able to show democracy is stronger. But there is so much harm that has been done already that will continue to be done. I mean, just today, we were hearing on the way over that some members of the press were physically ejected from
an EPA hearing
or a conference or something today. And, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, people like, you know, the USB News crew or Amy Goodman, right? You know, I'm talking about the mainstream, like, you know, CNN and the Associated Press.
Showing up to do their job.
And being forcibly ejected. You're not allowed here. This is not the country we're supposed to be in. This is not healthy. We're supposed to be setting an example. And, yeah, we're setting an example of what not to do. And we need to continue to speak up. It gets really hard. It gets disheartening and discouraging because you feel like you're not getting anywhere. But remember, you are. Every voice that speaks out adds up. And somebody hears that voice. Somebody says, yeah, that person is making a point. And they go on to make another point. It does matter. You're told all your life it doesn't. And I've learned over and over again how much it does. And I just hope there are people everywhere that realize that. I've seen so much joy, so much empowerment in people that never thought they had that kind of control and power before. So I'm hoping that manifests itself in the years ahead as we realize that we can overcome this. We can be better people. We can be a better country. And I think that's good for all of us. That's good for everybody.
Yeah, and I think it is a sleeping giant, this amalgamation of different people and citizens, and that, you know, I think the stagnation and the emphasis on the wrong issues, the wrong things, this diversion we've been living through itself is becoming untenable. I mean, the administration is frustrated that they're being investigated. Now they're saying that. It's been going on for a year, mm-hmm. and now they want to discredit it because it's getting uncomfortable.
You see, that's good. When they're uncomfortable, when they're frustrated, that means we're winning. Every moment we can make them uncomfortable is a victory.
Yeah, it's interesting though that before, you know, it got uncomfortable, it was you know, that's going on. I don't, that's a witch, you know, they'll call it the witch hunt, but they wouldn't go so far. Now they feel it's too close and they want to stop it, but I think what they're going to realize is it's something that is it's got much more momentum, and there are a lot more there are a lot of larger concerns behind it. For, you know, the existence of a balanced system with the checks and balances, the branches, there's a sense, there's a palpable sense that that is being they're running roughshod over it, you know, completely, I guess, circumventing or trying to short-circuit systems of power with new norms or lack of norms, or completely disrespecting this stuff with, you know, and that's been said a lot on the news cycle with Giuliani making statements about whether or not the president can be subpoenaed or even interviewed. But like you said, we are winning. Look at how many people are falling apart. Look at how many people have sifted through his cabinet. I mean, it is, I think, uncanny just the amount of willful ignorance and just carelessness for this office that on the surface these lizard people seem to respect, and they love that they want it, quote, want it, mm-hmm. Until it comes to bite them in the rear.
Yeah. It's amazing to see the people that will support this, that will turn a blind eye. You know, Pence syndrome, where basically everything that Trump does is great or means something, and completely ignoring all the evil, all the terrible things going on. So yeah, there is a lot ahead of us. The thing I think we have to remember as people who oppose this is not to turn on each other, because that always happens, especially left or center. You always attack the people closest instead of the true enemy, and that is a bad thing. That will make us weaker. We don't need purity tests. We don't need to agree on every issue. We need to realize that we're different. We're going to disagree on some things. For instance, I annoyed a lot of people last week when I talked about the BDS movement. That's bdsmovement.net to boycott the Israeli government and all the terrible things that they are doing to human beings. But it doesn't mean I can't stand next to you in the fight to preserve abortion rights, or, you know, to basically protect health care or immigration, things like that. But I will speak out when I see injustice. It's not going to always be in agreement with what you believe. And on that subject, wow, I just cannot believe how our media trips over itself to apologize for Israel every time they do something terrible. And last week, you know, it's already been forgotten that last week they murdered 60 people, you know, who were protesting. And here's the thing. This is really what gets me. It was said by Hamas, who rules Gaza. Considered a terrorist group in the United States and other places as well. They said that the majority of the males who were killed were Hamas members. And the media and the Israeli government jumped all over that, saying, here, there's proof. There you go. They're right there. See, they're all terrorists. We kill terrorists. Yay, you know. And first of all, you can't believe anything Hamas says. They're not nice people. You say that all the time. Constantly you say that. Yet when they say something like this, you blindly believe it and push that forward as proof of your agenda. No, they consider any male to be a member of Hamas. That's just how it is. It's not a nice way to live. I think we can all agree on that. In this particular case, the people who are burning tires and standing in their own territory were of no real threat. They were simply expressing their anger. Nobody on the Israeli side was hurt, and what the authorities did was unforgivable, and they need to pay the price for that. And if the price is a boycott, okay, great, but, you know, I think the price would be prosecutions. That's never going to happen, not with the current regime over there and not with our media over here and politicians who are afraid of annoying the wrong people. That has to change, and it's up to us as individuals to put the pressure on and realize that all the support for Israel from the right wing is nonsense, because you know they don't care about Israel, they don't care about Jews.
They are supported by actual Nazis.
Exactly.
Here in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
We really, really, really need to sober up.
Remember,
Israel.
Jews will not replace us.
Jews will not replace us.
What was that all about?
Charlottesville.
That was not the Israeli critics chanting that. That's what the right wing was chanting.
They didn't say Jews except for Israel at the border in specific circumstances. No.
And the fact that the Israeli government buys into this, the fact that they're naming streets and train lines after Trump, you know, you're the only country in the world doing this. It's not going to look good historically. So let's try and rein it back a little bit, figure out a solution. I was thinking, you know, a great solution to this. Let's bring people from South Africa into the Middle East, have them solve the problem, because they did a pretty good job in South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, the activists there that ended apartheid, you got a similar situation in Israel. Have those people come up, and whatever they say goes. And both sides have to deal with it. And, you know, no one side is an angel here. That is certainly true. And there are horrible things that we can point to on both sides. But when you massacre people like that, yeah, that's something that really has to be addressed. And when you ignore it, you become part of the problem.
Just think of the places we've been where we find streets and stuff that are named after a president or what. What was it?
George W. Bush. It was where was that? That was
Albania, right?
Was it Albania? That was a weird place to have a street named after Bush.
It was in Tirana.
Yeah.
It was Tirana. There is, I think, a George W. Bush street or avenue or something like that.
Yeah. It's not very big, but for some reason he did something they liked.
Israel, that's you in 10 years. You know, we're going to go and, like, you know, look at people pick up garbage on Trump Street or whatever.
You know what? When they opened up the embassy in Jerusalem, the typeface on the embassy is the same typeface that Trump uses on his hotels.
That's probably a rider.
Think about that.
In the contract.
And, yeah, you can say, oh, but Jerusalem is a historic capital. Well, you know, there's other history there, too. You don't own the history. And you have to consider all the history of all the other people there. You have to consider how they've been displaced. You have to consider illegal settlements on their land that we're just supposed to forget about. No, we have to deal with all of it. And Trump is an idiot for doing what he did, because he basically made this proclamation without getting anything in return. He could have said, you know what, give back the land that was taken in 1967, and then we'll move the embassy to Jerusalem or something like that. Might have been, you know, a give and take of some sort, because that is what it's going to take. But it's so one-sided. And like I've said to so many people around the world, you can't trust our government right now. Don't believe anything they say. They will back out of an agreement. Kim Jong-un, do not trust us. Can't believe I'm saying that, but it's true. We had another school shooting on Friday, which is horrible. And, you know, The Vice News report we saw last night, boy, that was depressing. I guess because it was something that was filmed by somebody who lived there. But all it was one-sided how more guns will solve the problem. To hear that coming from a community that just suffered a mass shooting, you know, 10 people killed, words fail me on this. You know, it's I'm sure there are people as enlightened as the Parkland survivors that we just haven't heard from, or that aren't being given enough attention. But how do you even talk to people that, you know, suffer something like this and still think that guns aren't the problem?
Yeah, no offense to people with head injuries, but way to go, Vice. You found some vegetable sitting in the AV club that could turn on a camera. That is not journalism. I'm sorry,
but
there are newspapers, there are people who actually can go and interview. It was all this, like, fourth wall, listen to the camera guy, producer, photographer narrate and answer questions from the people he's photographing. It was sloppy, and the guy was, I mean, again, monotone and talking, you know, from the back of the camera.
He was a high school kid, though. I mean, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I just think that there are a lot of people who aren't brain dead that believe that, and I don't know how to reach them. I don't know how to communicate if we can't get past this one basic thing that we have too many damn guns in the country, and that's why we have so many shootings. If you look at all the statistics, and nobody argues with these statistics, number of deaths, number of guns, number of deaths by guns. You know, there's a parallel. When you have more guns, you have more deaths by guns. You can't argue with that. You can say, yeah, this makes me safer to have a gun to protect myself against all the people with guns, but it doesn't really, and the statistics back that up. So I just don't follow the logic. I try, but I can't.
Well, I think it's interesting that there's not enough it's a local, like, self-identity. There's no reflection on the psychosis, on the sickness that you identify your area as a place. Like he was saying, oh, you're coming to the wrong place, March for Our Lives. If you think, you know, that we're allies here just because we're students, this is the wrong place. The place has an identity that is symptomatic of the, like, kind of indoctrination of the gun industry, and the idea that a place is inherently for guns just by virtue of a lot of people being that sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, and seeing the gun personified. Like, the gun doesn't kill somebody. The person kills somebody. Okay, then the person's the problem. Make the person not interact with the gun, and guns can live in freedom and safety in their own country or something. These are arguments that we really shouldn't be having. And, you know, if your side believes that AR-15s are something that are important to us, then I think your side is wrong. If the Founding Fathers said that, I think they're wrong. If the Second Amendment says that, I think that's wrong. But none of that is true. They don't say that. These are wild interpretations of things that were written hundreds of years ago that don't apply to today, and we need to figure out what does work today. Clearly, this does not. So I think that's a good starting point. Something's not working, and it's quite likely it's not, you know, the number of doors in the school. You can shoot people outside where there are no doors. It's the number of weapons. But unfortunately, the number of minutes we have is almost zero. We'll have to take this up in the future. Hopefully there are no more incidents like this, but I know that's wishful thinking.
Feel free to write us at otw@2600.com, and we'll read your lengthy dissertation on the virtues of weapons.
Well, yeah, because we're guaranteed that's the kind of mail we get. Whenever you criticize weapons, you get a lot of people defending them, not so many people defending people without weapons, which it doesn't happen in any other country.
We can't wait to skim through and ignore most of your
ridiculous.
Oh, stop
it. We're not going to ignore anybody. We love all our listeners.
Sort of.
But we're out of time, so we have to go.
Bye-bye.
This is dedicated to the Queen, who, by the way, I discovered when they play God Save the Queen, the Queen does stand up as well. I always wondered about that, and the Royal Wedding was a time to actually see that. So I learned something. We'll see you next week. Good night.